Stein Online's live Clubland Q&A is just 1 minute away.
This is Mark Stein, back after four sellout voyages for the fifth annual Mark Stein Cruise. If you like the sound of April in Portugal and Spain on the fabulous new ship, the Celebrity Apex, well, you'll be at the apex of celebrity for our traditional week of sun, sea, and civilizational collapse. I'll have special guests from both sides of the Atlantic, including a reunion of all your favourite telly presenters from the glory days of GB News, who've since been sacked. And we'll do all the things you like about the Mark Stein Show and Stein Online, but close up and on water. More details at steinonline.com or marksteincruise.com.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. January 15th, 2025. It is 3 p.m. in Washington, D.C., where Pam Bondi, the incoming Attorney General, has been kicking senatorial butt. 4 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, where a Baroness Time Server's joke of a COVID inquiry has resumed to address the vaccines, and many of this show's friends are in attendance. 9 p.m. in Paris, 10 p.m. in, I won't even attempt it in my present state, 10 p.m. in Kiev, 11 p.m. in Moscow, 11:30 p.m. in Tehran for all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran out of solidarity with the half-hour time zone. 1:45 a.m. in Kathmandu for all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone. 4 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers, sorry about that. 7 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne. I'm still kind of sorry because it's not a terribly convivial hour for the kippers and kedgeree. But 9 a.m. in Auckland, and even later in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific. 1 year ago today, I was sitting in an hotel room in Washington, D.C., Evil Town. Only reason I was there, only reason I ever go there for more than a decade now, is for courtroom appearances. And a year ago today, I was preparing for the commencement of my trial in the District of Columbia Superior Court. Don't want to think about that, so how about this? 5 years ago today, January 15th, 2020, the Ministry of Health in Tokyo confirmed, very supposedly, the first case of COVID-19 in Japan, half a decade ago. For some of us, the COVID era recedes into the rearview mirror. For others, it is still very much in the here and now, in the present tense, because some people have to live with the pain and suffering of having been damaged by these fraudulent COVID vaccines, which have made a few people very rich and seen them rewarded disgracefully with knighthoods and damehoods. And they have made far more people very poor and entirely ruined. People who were crippled by these dreadful pseudo-vaccines and are unable to work, and can get no help from the healthcare systems and as I say, have been financially ruined. Have you seen, if you've watched the UK inquiry, have you seen that wanker who's the counsel in chief to the inquiry, the wanker in chief? He's a real wanker, even by wanker standards. He's a mega wanker. He's one we would have given our special mega wanker who's the wanker song to, if I was still up to doing television. What is his name? He deserves to be more famous. I think we should get Hugo Keith, KC. I'm memorising his face so I can yank his nose if I ever see him in the street. What a ghastly, condescending twerp, even by ghastly, condescending twerp standards. They figure they've got this in the bag, or they wouldn't put a man like that on TV representing British officialdom. I'm feeling pretty sick still. It's either the monkeypox or whatever they're calling the new variant, and I've not got much of a voice, so I may have to bail early and suddenly, but I'll give it a go, and I hope you'll forgive me if I'm not up to a full hour. Did you see that Neil Gaiman, the best, who isn't a gay man, quite the opposite. Neil Gaiman, the best-selling author, has been accused of raping his nanny. Don't know him, haven't read him. Couple of his books are big on TV, I gather. His nanny has accused him of raping her. Five other women have accused him. Headline from the Babylon Bee. To avoid prosecution in Britain, Neil Gaiman joins Islamic grooming gang. It would be funny if it weren't so pitifully plausible. Okay, let's get to your questions, and we've got a lot of them. William P. says, we were lab rats, but unlike lab rats, can't be euthanized when injured or disabled to hide evidence of harm. Gives an interesting cast to Stürmer's push, that's Sir Keir Stürmer, to legalize euthanasia. Your thoughts? Yeah, we're basically, in fact, we'll have a tale for our time on this very theme starting on Friday. We're basically euthanizing the entire Western world. Don't take it from me. I think Pope Francis has made a similar observation in the last few weeks. It's what happened 5 years ago? Well, actually, you know, what was it, more like 4 years ago, when these vaccines were suddenly produced and mandated for everybody. Everybody told to go and get them. Most people had no need of it. This is why this, most people had no need of this. But the indifference to the suffering that has been caused and the way people who were injured by the vaccines, who'd show up at a hospital to get the vaccine and then they'd go back to that hospital a week later because they were wrecked. The vaccine had wrecked them. None of the doctors or nurses knew anything. Now, in the United Kingdom, which has no culture of free speech anymore, a culture of free speech is important. And so Ofcom wouldn't have its powers if ordinary people just said, piss off, Ofcom. But instead, they've extended Ofcom's powers. Britain has always had a rather regulated broadcasting environment, but because the internet has been unregulated, they've now extended Ofcom's powers to the internet. So you're not going to be able to get this show in the United Kingdom soon. They're just sort of easing their way into it at the moment. But I sit in the rubble of my British broadcasting career because I told the truth. This is the worst medical crime in the last century. It's worse than thalidomide because Western governments are in on it. It's not possible. It only requires the most cursory research to know that Big Pharma knew that these things were having side effects of a nature and at a rate that made these products, that should have rendered these products unmarketable. But there was too much money in it for them. And likewise for the governments, they were too invested in it. That picture we sometimes post at Stein Online of Ursula von der Leyen giving a tongue sarnie to the head guy from Pfizer, Albert Bourland, that's actually the relationship between Big Pharma and Western governments. Most of you, almost all of you, listening to this, had no reason to take those vaccines ever. But they oversold them, and they, even if you were in a profession that didn't mandate them, as the US military did and as various jurisdictions did, they were completely oversold. All the claims have been pulled back. Oh, yes, you're fully vaccinated. You can't get it and you can't give it, this disease, right? Neither is true. So they pumped this stuff into entire populations. The chief minister of Gibraltar boasting that Gibraltar was the first country in the British family of nations, as he put it, to vaccinate 100% of its population. And that's why they will never... This smug prick, I apologise, I don't usually work blue, but I was ready to explode when I saw this creep, this barristerial creep. What's his name again? He should be more famous. He should be a household name. Hugo Keith's patronising wankery today. Hugo Keith, KC. He's King's Counsel at the moment. He'll be a knight, like the AstraZeneca guys, various English, Irish, Australian, couple of other nationalities, all been garlanded with knighthoods for inflicting AstraZeneca on the British public. We couldn't get them to talk about it. They sent their lawyers from the minute we began covering it with our first vaccine victims. We couldn't get anyone from AstraZeneca to agree to talk about it on camera because they knew, Dame whatever, Sir whatever, you vile creeps. They knew, this is the thing, it's way worse than thalidomide because they carried on demanding that we pump this stuff into our arms even when they knew about these side effects. And that's why they have these smug pricks. I'm sorry about that, I don't usually work blue. What's his name again? He deserves to be the most famous guy on the planet. Hugo Keith KC. When you look at Hugo Keith KC's condescending wankery, that's how he thinks of Charlotte and Vicky and all the other people bereaved and crippled by this poison that we've had on their show. Yes. Well, they're in, the benefits far outweigh the drawbacks. Oh, God. Is it having too many COVID boosters that makes you drawl like a sneering patrician wanker, Hugo Keith Casey? What did I say? I was going to yank his nose if I... I wish I wasn't so enfeebled. And... and exhausted, because if I was up to it, I wouldn't just yank his nose, I'd sock him in the jaw. It's just a mess. They wouldn't do that if they weren't confident that they can hold the line on this thing. It's such a disgrace. Josh Passel writes, apologies for being so thick, but isn't it clear that His Majesty's government is thoroughly conflicted on the AstraZeneca jabs? Well, it's conflicted on all jabs. AstraZeneca has been withdrawn from virtually every country on Earth. That's the great British success story. Nobody wants it. How, continues Josh, how can it claim to rule honestly and fairly for the injured and bereaved when it simultaneously stands liable for mandating the clot shots in the first place? Must it not recuse itself from the matter? Spare me the baronetical inquiries. There are no baronets involved in this inquiry, Josh. Baronets, on an inquiry would have been the old days. To quote Tony Soprano, give me my bleeping money. That was Bob Geldof, I thought, on Live Aid. When, you know, the big charity thing for Ethiopia, and he stood there on live TV and he said, give us your bleeping money. Well, that's really all that the victims should need to say to this dirty, rotten, stinking, corrupt inquiry. But you're right. You know, to put it in Naomi Wolf terms, this is like Hitler presiding over the post-war Nuremberg tribunals. They shouldn't be involved in this. And this sneering Pratt, Pratt. I can say Pratt, can't I? I can't say... I'm trying to remember. I won't use the other word. I'll say sneering Pratt, Hugo Keith, Casey, who turns my stomach. These guys do well out of everything. There's all these people, Boris Johnson, Matt Hancock, all these. And to be honest, the biggest misstep in a 70-year reign was when Her Majesty the Queen said she thought people not getting the vaccine were selfish. She shouldn't have put her thumb on the scale. But she's dead now, curiously enough. But this is, and it's not even a particularly British thing. You know, you've got Joe Biden and all the rubbish he said, you know. People, all the people who still have their telly careers, like Rachel Maddow. They're putting her back on to 5 days a week. I think I saw somewhere or other Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. She's the one who explained that getting the vaccine stops COVID dead. And it doesn't. All the people who got the vaccine, like Joe Biden and Justin Trudeau, getting COVID left, right and centre. I've never had the COVID. Right. But these guys who keep getting these booster shots all the time. Then keep getting almost, you know, oh, here am I. Here's a photo op of me getting the 12th booster. Oh, I'm just going to quarantine for 2 weeks because I've got the COVID rebound COVID or whatever they're calling it. This is why they will never, all these people now. Oh, well, yes, we went too far with the lockdowns and it's a shame we damaged a generation of children. But let's let bygones be bygones, you know? Well, Charlotte can't let bygones be bygones. Her husband's dead and she lives with that every day because Boris Johnson and Her Late Majesty killed him. He was 33. He had no reason to take this stupid thing. And this is, again, the expert class. We had rule by experts. This is what they've always wanted. Rule by experts, right? Technocracy, which technocracy is really tyranny posing as something more sophisticated. And we've had rule by... I don't know why anybody... I've never really recovered from that third booster shot. Now they're telling me that because of the climate change, I need... Why would you ever listen to experts again? Especially in an environment where anything that counters the expert is immediately taken down from Facebook, including even... The vaccine victims' submissions via their KC to this baroness, what's she called again? Baroness Sweepit of Under the Carpet, whatever her name is. This baroness, the submissions to the baroness in a government inquiry and the KC, the King's Counsel, the barrister, put them up on Facebook so everybody could take a look at them. And Facebook took it down 20 minutes later. They're still the official position of the evil bastards at Facebook. You know, we hear all this stuff. Oh, yeah, well, the social media now, it's all going to be different. No. According to Facebook, these... Or is it YouTube? Which one? Yeah, it's YouTube. I beg your pardon. Facebook is, what is it, Zuckerberg, who's pretending to go along with all the end to all the fact checkers and everything, with the help of, what are they called, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex? God, it's so pathetic. This is the ruling class under the guise of this disinformation, making sure you peasants can't, you know, if these guys had been in charge, no one would ever have heard of the Black Death. Because, oh, that's just misinformation. Yeah, if Zuckerberg had been running Facebook in medieval Europe, you'd never have heard of the Black Death. Oh, an awful lot of my neighbours don't seem to be around. Oh, that's just misinformation. Wayne Cunnington says, "Hello, Mark. I'm so sick of this, you know. Because something has changed. When I sort of started doing things like this, it was pre-internet. And the internet has turned out to be the greatest system of control. We thought it was all going to open up the world. The entirety of human knowledge would be at your fingertips. But no, it just means that people actually don't believe their own eyes. Their own eyes. Wayne Cunnington. Wayne is a vaccine victim and a great friend of the old Mark Stein show. And Wayne has been, you should check Wayne out on Twitter, because he's had some great observations on the rubbish that's been going on the last couple of days. "Hello, Mark. It's a horrific prospect getting your hopes up with yet another module of the inquiry. But with indemnity from prosecution and guided questions in place to protect the guilty, I don't think it's going to achieve much, sadly. But I'm open to being wrong. Your thoughts?" No, I don't disagree with a word you say there. The thing about all this, oh, let's let bygones be bygones. Okay. Okay, wanker political class of the Western world, if you want bygones to be bygones, why don't you, and you've blown so much money and crippled your own economies and ensured that the next generation of adults in your countries are going to be socially stunted morons by imprisoning them during lockdown. Why don't you, if you really wanted bygones to be bygones, you would basically just give Wayne and Vicky and Charlotte and all the rest enough. I always single out Vicky and Charlotte because they were the first vaccine bereaved we had on the show. And if you ever saw that first show, their crushed faces, I was actually staggered by that. People occasionally say, oh yeah, you got someone claiming that she was gang raped in Rotherham. She seems like a rather bad actress to me. No one ever said that of Vicky and Charlotte. It was very clear that everything they said was completely authentic. And if you really did, oh, let's let bygones be bygones. Let's reset everything and pretend that 2020, 2021 never happened. The first thing you would do, you evil bastards, is to ensure that these people didn't have to worry about how they're going to pay next month's rent, how they're going to buy a new school uniform for their kids. I hate these people. I wish I'd never got it. I used to believe all that. So, oh, but the pen is mightier than the sword. You know, I look at all the things we've talked about on the Mark Stein show for years. The pen is mightier than the sword. If the pen were mightier than the sword, they wouldn't still be screwing over Wayne. They wouldn't still be screwing over Sammy Woodhouse and the other victims of these rape gangs. As I think about it, with some, you know, you're better off in the state we're in forming a terrorist organization, or at least something like Sinn Féin, where you have one foot in the political world and one foot in the terrorist world, because the political class is completely degenerate. I'm not saying I support Sinn Féin's aims. Obviously, I don't. I haven't at any time. But by basically They're the leading party north and south of the border in Ireland. And in fact, things are so ridiculous that Keir Starmer is going to compensate. You know, the people testifying at this lousy inquiry can't get any compensation, but that bastard Sir Keir Starmer is getting ready to compensate Gerry Adams, right? The IRA guy, right? The IRA, he's had a great life. He's not like Vicky and Charlotte. He blew up whatever Lord Mountbatten was, the Queen's uncle once removed, or whatever the heck it was, always get bit mixed up on the Battenbergs. But he blew Lord Mountbatten up in his fishing boat at Mullock Moor and still got invited to meet the Queen at Hillsborough Castle, right? That's great, isn't it? Oh, we're all frightfully British here. Blow us up and you can come round to the palace. And then that's not going to happen to Sammy Woodhouse, and that's not going to happen to Wayne Cunnington. So you're better off, the logic of it is, you're better off being Gerry Adams in the United Kingdom today. You're better off being Gerry Adams, a terrorist, and then Sir Keir can't wait to compensate you with taxpayer money. You're better off being Gerry Adams than you are being Wayne Cunnington or Vicky or Charlotte or Sammy Woodhouse or any of the real victims of this evil government. Denise O'Leary says, I have a story about the COVID booster shot. I flew back from visiting folks in Ottawa in 22. And as directed, went to some rented office space in Victoria. This would be Victoria, British Columbia, not Victoria Down Under or Victoria Falls or any of the many other Victorias around the Commonwealth. Some rented office space in Victoria, BC, to get the booster. I'd been a good Joe up till then, getting the shots, not thinking much about it. Within hours, walking home, I knew something was wrong, terribly wrong. For days, I stumbled around my apartment, dazed, not clear what the problem was. Then I decided to pull myself together and go out to the plaza. I collapsed on the way home and was taken to the emergency room. As they were putting me on the stretcher, I overheard one paramedic whisper to the other, myocarditis. Unlike way cool people, I had earnestly studied Latin and I knew what that meant, inflammation due to a weakened heart. I also realised that they did not realise that I knew what it meant. I vowed I'd look it up when I got back from the hospital. I wondered why they were so sure. The doctor at the hospital would not interact with me about what happened. He suggested I needed a cane or a walker. That simply wasn't true, generally, and I knew it. By the time I saw him, it was very late at night and I was exhausted, so I simply wandered away from the hospital. I found a taxi and went home. I later learned that provincial legislation... So this is the government of British Columbia, if you want to know what government buildings to burn down. The government of British Columbia. I later learned that provincial legislation forbid him to discuss the matter honestly with me. You know what the Irish say? If anyone can help me, it's my brother in the army. I have a brother in the army, so to speak. When I finally felt I could talk to him about it, he just said, you had a massive immune reaction to the COVID booster shot. Wish someone had said so earlier and dealt with it as such. Among local people, I got zero sympathy. Everyone was anxious to protect the authorities from any suggestion of mishandling these matters. I was, they said, one of tiny minority who were maybe merely imagining things. It wasn't until the convoy later that year that I began to have some hope. You know, I've heard from a lot of people with stories such as Denise's in recent years. And the one thing that Denise says in particular, the doctors whispering to each other about what they think it is and then not telling you. So they're confident between themselves that it's myocarditis, but then they just say to you, well, you're an unfit, worn-out croc. You need to get yourself a wheelchair. I've heard similar stories from people in the British Isles, in France, in Australia, all over the world. And that's the second stage of the vaccination program. Initially, when people, the first people who got the vaccine, when they then went back to the hospital where they'd got the vaccine and they're crippled, nobody knows anything. It's the first, no, the government, these public health officials, whatever they're called, Valance and Whitty, all the guys with knighthoods now, sometimes multiple knighthoods. I forget, is it Whitty, the one who it's one knighthood wasn't enough for him, so he's got three knighthoods or whatever it's up to now. They sent out no guidance on possible. So even if you don't think that Boris Johnson is a mass murderer, even if you don't think Fauci is a mass murderer, the fact is the public health bodies knew about side effects and didn't pass that down the chain to the doctors and nurses. So the doctors and we've heard this from doctors, we've heard it from people on the show. We had one lady who went into hospital, and she said the doctor told her they hadn't had anything. There's actually, this is the National Health Service, which has got pamphlets for everything. But they didn't have any pamphlets for possible side effects of the vaccines in the early weeks. So the doctor said, well, I've just been Googling about it, and you eventually come to the dark web and some California doctor who's been struck off for expressing concerns about it says, well, this is a side effect and that is a side effect. So there's that. And then the stage after, the stage, you know, they basically can't. It's a fundamental breach of the Hippocratic Oath. They can't talk, they can't treat their patients because by government edict, they can't be honest with their patients. This is the scandal. And this is why nobody who was in government during those years, even if you don't think all of them should be in prison, even if you don't think all of them should be dangling from a lamppost, they should at the very minute, all these people, Hancock and Johnson and all the rest of it, none of them should be anywhere near government ever again. I'm so sorry to hear that, Denise. I hope it's a long recovery, you know, and something like myocarditis doesn't just sort of clear up. And I hope now at least those dirty, stinking, rotten, corrupt hospitals doing the bidding of politicians in the British Columbia government. And I don't, you know, I'm not saying this party or that party, because all parties were in on it. You know, there's the during the COVID, this is the COVID years are the perfect illustration of why you need full open debate, because all there was a choice between voting for the lockdown party or voting for the even more lockdown party. Robert Fox says, let's see, gang rape of hundreds of thousands of defenseless girls as an act of war by Pakistani nationals, using the population as a lab experiment for recklessly developed quote-unquote vaccines, state-imposed censorship against contrarian views that run afoul of the official narratives. I wonder what else is being covered up. Surely these aren't the only things. Great job exposing all of this, Mark, and staying with it. It's not easy to be the lone voice crying out in the media wilderness. If anyone deserves a knighthood, it's you. Well, listen, if Chris Whitty's got three knighthoods or whatever it is, I should have a dukedom at the very least. Rich, it's no satisfaction. You know, the people we had on the Mark Steyn show, their lives are ruined. That's whatever it is now, over 2 years ago. And the buggers still will not make them whole. I was once involved in a criminal case in Grafton County and in New Hampshire, and the victim witness lady kept going on about, you know, making us whole, as she put it, that's her job, to make the victims whole. Nobody's making these victims whole. Nobody's making the victims of Rotherham and Rochdale whole. In fact, they're not even using that pansy lingo. This guy, what's his name again? He deserves to be more famous. Hugo Keith, KC. As I said, I'm memorising his face so I can yank his nose if I ever see him in the street. Hugo Keith, KC, he's not even doing the hypocritical bollocks and say, oh, we're committed to making these victims. No, he's still sneering at them. Sneering at them in the so-called inquiry, which is not a real inquiry. Richard Borzyshowski. I had a stab at it, Richard. It's the best. My eyesight isn't good, so I think I may be seeing a couple of extra Z's in there, but not as many Z's as Zelensky has Y's. Oh, you've got a Y too. It's all gone rather blurry. I made myself so angry I've lost my eyesight. Greetings, Mark. It seems that in the frozen 51st state of the USA, our governor is taking liberties with our Westminster parliamentary system. First, he prorogues Parliament, but not for the good of the country as intended, but for his own benefit. Then it appears the Liberals are fast-tracking UN and World Economic Forum elitist and holder of three passports. Yeah, Mark Carney. He's bigger than countries, Mark Carney. If you're an American, Mark Carney was governor of the Bank of Canada and then governor of the Bank of England. And it used to be that people, I don't know how he feels about him now, but it used to be that people like Nigel Farage absolutely loathed Mark Carney because he was one of the driving forces behind the anti-Brexit campaign, Project Fear, as they called it back then. It appears the Liberals, but this is to do with him condescending to... Then he was doing something with the World Economic Forum, I forget what, but he's at Davos all the time. He says, it appears the Liberals are fast-tracking UN and World Economic Forum elitist and holder of three passports. That's a bit of Mark Carney, Richard, that you should emulate. You know, I used to be. In some ancient piece, I was interviewed in Canada by Linda Frum, David Frum's sister, now a senator. And Linda was very curious to know about my passports. And I said, I don't believe in multiple passports. All the trouble in the world is caused by people with multiple passports. It's like in Lebanon, 50% of the population back then, as I said to her, also have Canadian passports. And the other 50% also have Australian passports. That's one of the huge problems in the world. I said, I wasn't a multiple passport guy. Passports were... You know, citizenship, I think I said, was about allegiance, and divided allegiance wasn't a good thing, so I only had a Canadian passport. Well, since then, of course, The Canadian state basically tried to destroy me via their human rights commissions, and I've had differences with various other countries too. I now have a zillion passports. It's just a travel document. And at a time when they're trying to with COVID, where they did all the, you know, like they said about Brexit, oh, it's very important that you have the Northern Ireland Protocol and the, you know, the UK and Ireland were in a common travel area. And so the government in Dublin, the first thing it did with the COVID was to say that nobody from Great Britain could come in. That's in breach of their obligations. So I've changed my view on that. Now, I don't care about, I don't owe allegiance to any sovereign, and I've got a zillion passports and always keep a few extra sewn into the jacket of my coat, because when they're talking about 15-minute cities and you need to have an up-to-date vaccination schedule in order to fly from London to Madrid, no state can command your allegiance. And you should just acquire as many passports. You know, it's an Irish passport's pretty easy to get. If you've ever changed planes in Shannon, you might be eligible for one. Give it a go. Nicola Timmerman says, Mark Carney, the would-be replacement. Yeah, I just want to say about this. Yeah, this is the thing. So everyone, this is why it's most of the stuff that's in the newspapers, on the cable shows, on the talk radio, isn't worth talking about. Everyone's getting, Justin Trudeau he's quit as Prime Minister. Oh, really? He's gone now? Because that's the way it's supposed to work. Oh, no, he hasn't gone. He's going to stay on for as long as it takes until the next globalist tool can be manoeuvred into place. Mark Carney, the only good thing about this is for people with, you know, memories of things before the day before yesterday, is if you remember Michael Ignatieff, right? The BBC telly intellectual. He became a leader of the Canadian Liberal Party. And I found that very odd because he and I belonged to a little sort of social group of Canadian expats in London, run by an absolutely lovely lady, and she'd have us around for dinner or whatever. And whenever the talk turned to Canadian affairs, he'd say, well, now you're just boring me with all this Canadian talk, so I'm going to call it a night, and he'd leave. Which I found interesting. So anyway, the BBC intellectual, next thing I know, he's a leader of the Labour Party, leader of the Canadian Liberal Party, and he issues this book before the next election with a fantastic line in it. Canada is the place which, if I ever needed one, I would call home. Can you imagine even the most obtuse American candidates putting that out as his pre-election book? Canada is the place which, if I ever needed one, I would call home. And so he lost. And funnily enough, the first thing, not the first thing, but the seventh thing he did after losing was to leave Canada. He's full-time at Harvard now in their School of Government or something or whatever. So the question is whether Mark Carney can be successfully painted as this year's Michael Ignatieff rather than the 2015 Justin Trudeau. But things have got a lot worse on the free speech front since then. And undoubtedly, Mark Carney is just, you know, perhaps, I think there was something saying that Klaus Schwab was going to step down as head of the WEF, or certainly as head of day-to-day operations, because he's 137. But it's not clear to me yet how they're managing the succession. So maybe Mark Carney feels he needs to kill time for a couple of years serving as Prime Minister of a G7 nation. These are terrible people. This is the thing I said. This is why when you're talking about what's in the newspaper, what's on the cable channels, You're not talking about anything that matters, because the important thing, the essential thing is, as I said, you know, however long ago it was, is that nothing that matters will be permitted to change. That's why Justin Trudeau had to go, because people loathe him. But he's going to be replaced by Mark Carney. So that's grand, isn't it? Sign Online's Clubland Q&A live around the planet. Oh, here's the highlight of the show. Mark Steiner's dropped in to tell you all about our weekend music show. Go, Mark. Hey, this is Mark Stein on The Town this week. Songs across a century, songs around the world, from the continent and from the Commonwealth. We'll open up the Jacques Brel songbook and the Mrs. O'Leary songbook, and we'll spend a good day and a bad day in the studio with Sinatra. On The Town, Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio. Yeah, and don't forget that Saturday at 5 London time is Saturday 6 p.m. in Western Europe, or 12 midday North American Eastern. So I hope you'll want to tune in for that. It's a pretty good show, I think, we got planned. Mark Stein, live around the planet. It is 16 to 4 North American Eastern time. That is 16 to 9 Greenwich Mean Time. A little behind, a lot ahead, according to where you chance to be on this turbulent earth. Nicola Timmerman writes, Mark Carney, the would-be replacement for Justin, wrote a book about how we must change society to react to climate change. Sounds like a would-be dictator, even worse than Justin, because smarter. Do you think Canadians are stupid enough to fall for another elitist just because he doesn't like Trump? Yeah, I think they are. Just as I think half the population of the United Kingdom was stupid enough to fall for Mark Carney's bollocks. Wherever he's planning, let me see, Governor of the Bank of Canada, Governor of the Bank of England. You know, if he became, I don't know whether he's able to, but if he became Governor of the Bank of Slovenia, they think he was. It's this, again, it's this prostration before an expert class. It's actually worse than feudal systems, because they had no ambitions in that respect, because they were dukes or margraves or whatever. And at a certain level, they understood that they owed their position to the haphazardness of heredity. And simply because they knew the kid was going to be a duke or a margrave or whatever, they weren't this idea. This is a particular phenomenon of our time, which is why we're doing a Tale for Our Time on this related theme starting on Friday. Yeah, he's exactly, as I said, the question is whether he is the equivalent of 2015 Justin Trudeau or 2010 or whatever it was, 2010 Michael Ignatieff. I should think in a genuinely free public discourse, which Canada no longer has, because I'm sure Rosie Barton will be making sure that he's 2015 Justin Trudeau rather than 2010 Michael Ignatieff. But the idea that that's the thing, nothing can be that matters can be permitted to change. You've even seen it's up on the internet. James O'Keefe just did some interview with some deep state spook type. I think he's an FBI guy. Bragging about how he's going to be subverting Trump. Now, the thing about this is Trump knows this because they did it to him starting during the peaceful transition of power during his first term. So he knows this time. So I take it he's committed to resisting it. Whether it's possible to resist it is the big question. But in Canada and in the UK, I think these two things, the two things, I think in Canada, it's really not possible because it's a much more constricted media environment, and I think increasingly the UK or certainly England is a lost cause, because these are the most basic things that we're seeing in London. These vaccine victims, you know, quite a lot of them came to see me at the High Court whatever it's called, the King's Bench Division in London last year. And quite a few of them came to the party that Chris Davis threw for all of us afterwards. And and in fact, one of them, Jules, whom you've seen on our show many times, Jules was taken ill while at the event. They can't, you know, it's 5 years ago now, right? Even the governments have stopped insisting that school kids can't go to school. Even the governments have stopped saying, oh, no, you can't go to the Starbucks, the one you particularly like, because that's 7 blocks away. You have to go to the one that's only 3 blocks away. Even the lousy, stinking governments of the way. Even that prat Emmanuel Macron has stopped saying he would like to emmerder, which is a French bit of robust French vernacular. He'd like to emmerder the ones who've refused to get jabbed. Even Andrew Neil has stopped saying that people who don't get the jabs shouldn't be allowed to go to restaurants. Even Nigel Farage has stopped recommending Tony Blair as head of COVID vaccines. You know, it's a long time ago for all those. Oh, Nigel. Oh, Andrew. Oh, Emmanuel. Let's all just let bygones be bygones. Okay, if you were serious about that, you would make whole Wayne Cunnington and all the others, so that they don't have to wake up every day wondering not only whether they're going to make it physically through the day, but whether it's economically viable for them to continue existing. You bloody awful bastards. I love all this. You know, oh, we're so kind now. The thing about all those beastly governments they had a century ago, they weren't kind like us. Really? You're presiding over a regime where you mandate a totally unnecessary medical procedure that kills people. That's how kind you are. Oh, you're so kind and compassionate and caring. Not like all those beastly governments a century ago. You're so kind and compassionate and caring that you let little girls be gang raped in towns all over your country. And then you say, well, yes, we'd like to do something about it. But unfortunately, if we were to do something about it, then it might risk a backlash against Muslims. So they'll just have to keep quiet and continue getting gang raped because it's all for the good of our vibrantly diverse society. Screw you. I should have been Jerry Adams. He'll be getting a knighthood soon. Barking Mad and Proud, possibly not his or her real name, says, somebody please explain a major change in the temper of a culture. Decades ago, we were at war, hot and cold, with totalitarianisms such as communists and Nazis. Back then, we had no hesitation to criticise, mock, or heckle them at will. The present iteration of Western civ can be said to be in a state of de facto combat with the fanatical militant fragment of Islam, and now we fear to offend and criticise them to the point of being craven about it. What has changed in the interim? The nature of our enemy or our nature? Well, I think it's ours pretty. I would slightly disagree with you. If you go back 30 years to the end of the Cold War, 1989, so that's 36 years ago, the Berlin Wall came down. And if you notice, if you go back and you look at the coverage, I write about this in the opening chapter of America Alone, it ought to have been a great victory. Because the West had defeated the communist bloc. That ought to have been a big victory, but there was no sense of ideological triumph that our way had beaten their way. Even at the time, if you go back and you look at stuff from 1989 as the dominoes tumbled, and then in the years between that and the fall of the Soviet Union, the disintegration of the Soviet Union a couple of years later, there was no sense of ideological victory for the very good reason that there was no ideological victory. Communism may have collapsed in Central and Eastern Europe, but it has thrived in the intervening third of a century all over the Western world, so that communist ideas are held by the leaders of almost all the institutions that matter. So even a third of a century ago, we lacked sufficient civilizational confidence to say, well, we beat them. We beat them. And I think if you then go back to the Second World War, we drew completely the wrong lessons. You know, we were fighting Germany, Japan, and Italy. But instead of saying, oh, Germany, Italy, and Japan are bad, we drew the lesson that nationalism was bad. That Germany, Italy, and Japan would have been fine if they hadn't been so nationalistic. So therefore, nationalism is bad. And so that led to things like the European Union and all the rest of it. So I think we've been... What's changed now? What has changed now, though, is the total abolition of our civilizational inheritance. So we now... The thing about the wacky students, so, you know, the give peace a chance types in the 1960s, is that they were still being taught by professors, for the most part, by professors who had all their marbles, who had themselves been learned in the old ways. That's not true now. It's like deranged students are taught by deranged teachers. It's just going on. I don't know how many generations it is since then, but it's over half a century. And eventually things have been bollocksed for so long that it's very difficult to... You know, I saw Ben Habib, who we had on the show a few times. Ben, I think it was last time, was it last year when he was on, I think, to talk about the Northern Ireland Protocol. Now, Ben Habib's fallen out, there's a surprise, with Nigel, as everybody does, and Kate Hoey is upset that he's out of the Reform Party and things now. But here's a list of things that he's in favour of at the top of his pinned tweet or whatever you call it on his Twitter feed. And one of them, the third or fourth one down, Ben is of Pakistani origin, as they say, but he has his fourth thing down is empire. Yeah, because pretty much everything that works in Pakistan is like... the Lady Reading Hospital, which we've mentioned before, is when some jihadist prematurely self-detonates and he has to be patched up, they take him to Lady Reading Hospital because it's the best for that in Pakistan. And it's named after the Marchioness of Reading, who was the wife of the Marquess of Reading, surprisingly enough, Viceroy of India, the first Jewish Viceroy of India. So Lady Reading Hospital is a hospital that honours a Jewess, right? And that's where every prematurely self-detonating jihadist gets taken to be patched up. Everything in Pakistan, there's no shame saying that. We were talking about prorogation. I've never been a big proroguing guy, but certainly this is in what's happening with The Canadian Parliament is, I think, a worse prorogation than any of the other dodgy ones, starting with the one Sir John A. Macdonald asked the Governor-General for in 1873. This used to be, but what happened, you know, what happens when you teach people empire? Empire's a good thing, says Ben Habib. The pathetic wanker who is the king took out all that kind of talk in the coronation coronation ritual because he wanted it to be more inclusive. The thing about it is the inclusive future doesn't include you, you prat. So there's not going to be this thing. You're basically demolishing people's entire civilizational, and this is true in America too, slavery. You know, you're demolishing people's entire civilizational inheritance. And then you wonder why they suddenly, people who should be well-adjusted little girls suddenly decide they're going to be penisless boys for the rest of their life. That's on you, because you've made everything less secure, up to and including people's genitals. It's sick and evil. I hope starting Monday that we have some serious pushback against all this rubbish. But you're correct that there's been a general change in the temper of a people. Essentially, we have entire countries walking around as mass suicide cults now. And eventually, as I said about these fires, you know, this is what's incredible to me. They're some of the richest and most powerful people on the planet in Los Angeles. Los Angeles is one of the three or four towns that people in the most backward parts of the planet have heard of. It makes all this stuff, which accounts for whatever it is, it dominates the entertainment industry, which forms your opinions. I think about there have been famous fires, like the Great Chicago Fire of 1871, but that was at a time when even cities had mostly wood frame buildings. Certainly once you got past the very small downtown core. So you can understand why they'd burn. Now, everybody, it's a one-party state. Everybody votes for the Democrats, and the Democrats implement the policy platform that all the people agree with. And the result is that all your fancy homes, and these are people, it's not monetary value. People say, well, maybe the insurance will cover it. These are people who've gone around the world to buy exquisite paintings it's not about monetary value. They've acquired all this little statuette. It's not about the monetary value. They got all the money they need, but they'll never have those things again because the Democrat Party very obligingly put the world they wanted into being, and it consumed everything. So, yes, something has changed. I remember years ago, I was in Los Angeles. This years ago, I went to see some dear friends of mine, very eminent. They in the showbiz professions, they've got Grammys and Oscars and all kinds of other stuff. And we were just having dinner. Very dear friends of mine, don't agree on the politics or anything, but they were talking about there'd been some soccer match, I think it was, between Mexico and the United States. And they were very annoyed because Pat Buchanan had said something that they'd happened to see about how it was embarrassing to see all these Californian Hispanics cheering for the Mexico side. And they thought that was outrageous, that he should criticise them for not cheering the American team, cheering the Mexican team. And then they go on. We've talked there around that for a bit. And then we move on to something else. And they do a sort of early muted version of my Nothing Works Anymore thing, saying how they first moved out in the out west in the 1950s and how it was just the Golden State was truly golden. It was fabulous and all the rest of it. And unfortunately now, 40 years later, nothing much seemed to be quite as good. And that's certainly true. I can't stand being in Los Angeles because it takes you 2.5 hours to get anywhere. You know, every time I land at LAX and there's a driver waiting for me and I get into the car, and I start checking, you know, the emails I've missed since I've been on the plane or whatever. And I look out of the window 40 minutes later. We're still in the bloody airport. Nothing works in Cali. They were handed a jewel, the Democrats, and they destroyed it. Frank Gallenstein says, are you familiar with Sarah Kane? She is a contributor to Crisis magazine. She's also known as the Crusader Gal and is a political and cultural commentator who makes videos about the decline of the West, and she writes Homefront Crusade. Her recent contribution to Crisis magazine, published on January the 13th, proposes the Muslim rape gangs in the United Kingdom for the past two decades as are acts of a religious war against a people whom the perpetrators consider to be conquered. She points out these young girls were targeted specifically because they were white and not Muslim, and the rapists were not targeting members of their own community. Well, you know, that last bit is true. The first bit, you know, acts of a religious war against a people whom the perpetrators consider to be conquered. I've been in these towns and I've talked to these girls, and I don't think that's how the guys gang raping them, pissing on them, dousing them in petrol and then dancing around them with matches. I don't think that's how they think of it individually. I think you're dealing with people. Here, this is why diversity is where nations go to die. If you import from Pakistan to Yorkshire, huge numbers of people where first cousin marriage is the norm, right? And you don't even know what your first cousin looks like because she's all covered up and you never get to see her alone because she's always got people around her. And you're suddenly in a society. I talked about this when I, in a Norwegian context, when I was in Stavanger and spent a day with an utterly delightful lady whose job it was to teach Afghans dating tips and teach them, you know, the pleasures of courtship, where you say, okay, would you like to come back to my place and listen to my Johnny Mathis LP with the lights down low or whatever? Because instead of getting out the Johnny Mathis LP, these guys were instead just pulling the girls into the shrubbery and raping them, and it had become a problem. So they start teaching. Now, I spoke to some of these guys, and I spoke to others at the bus station in Östersund. There were some unusually articulate fellows, not from Afghanistan, from some other Muslim country. And they said, you don't know what it's like. We never see girls. You know, if you do see girls, they're always in company and they're always covered up. Suddenly, after a couple of hours on a plane, I'm in a town where all the girls are walking around, as they would consider it, naked. If you look, the Swedish girls in the shorts and the little halter top or whatever. So there's just flesh everywhere you look. Now, they're not that good looking in some of these Yorkshire towns, but they're all walking around with their flesh hanging out. It's all pierced and mottled and Some of it would be better discreetly veiled. But these guys are thinking there's two kinds of girl. And this is before we get into arguments about immigration or clash of civilizations. There's two kinds of girls. One is the boring, modest Muslima, my first cousin from Mirpur, who I've never met, but it's been understood since she was three that I'm going to marry her, and I got no choice in the matter. And she isn't any good at a lot of this stuff because she doesn't know all the tricks these white working class girls. She's never heard of them, so she's just going to lie there and put up with it for 10 minutes and then get back in the burqa. And these guys are living in a completely incompatible society that all the geniuses, all the experts have built for you, where there are two kinds of girls. The boring, respectable Muslima you're going to be spending the rest of your life with, and the ones who are just walking around, and by your standards, even if they're not showing a lot of flesh or whatever, but by Muslim standards, they are. And so people start gang raping them. And it's understood, because of Islamic supremacism, that they don't count because they're non-Muslim. That's the bit that I agree with here, Frank. But the idea that they're seeing this as acts of war, there may be... Actually, no, I wouldn't even say that, because when I learned who was running these Islamic rape gangs, like in Oldham, it was the guy who's a welfare councillor on Oldham Council, and he was running the Islamic rape gangs from right out of the council offices. And then in Rotherham, it was a guy who headed up a taxi firm, and the guy Tony Blair put in the House of Lords and things. These are people, they're prominent and they do well, but they're not thinking it out beyond as individuals when you're in the middle of gang sodomizing some poor little 11-year-old. You're not thinking of it beyond the sodomization of the poor 11-year-old. This idea that these are acts of war, yeah, I'm all in favour of seeing rape as an act of war and doing what, in fact, Madame Arbour, as I pointed out to her during the monk debate when she was doing all the, sex and feminism jokes about me and Nigel. I said, she did something. She prosecuted. She was the first person at the UN to prosecute rape as an act of war, conscious act of war, which it has been. If you look at, I can't remember this woman who's Tulip Siddiq, who's just been fired by Keir Starmer. But Tulip Siddiq's grandfather was basically the founding father of Bangladesh. And when he decided, I can't remember whether it was when he got rid of the Pakistanis or when they decided, whoever it was, decided to get rid of him. I can't remember. Pakistani, Bangladeshi politics is a bit too lively for me to pick up on, reliably state all the dates. But they always, the guys who killed Abdul Rahman and most members of his family, they breezed in and were cleansing the regime of his influence, raped a couple of 100,000 women. It's very common in war, but that's not what's going on here. This is just the reality of when you put guys, right, who've grown up with one kind of woman on the streets with a completely different kind of woman. Now, yes, in the totality of it, so individually, they're sodomizing these girls because they like sodomizing them. It's the sodomy they're there for. It's the dangling off the balcony they're there for. It's the dousing them in petrol they're there for. But the totality of this is, as Some of us have been saying for a bloody long time, demography is destiny. If you change the people who make up a society, you change everything about the society. So it is a conquest. The reality is that neither Keir Starmer nor that Tory leader who's just put Toby Young in the House of Lords, Kemi, she's now professing to be all super concerned about all the gang rape. She's never said anything about it. Never said anything about it. But for two reasons. For one reason, it's demography. Labour can't win these cities if the Muslims abandon them, as they would if the Labour cities were to start investigating the gang rape seriously. So Labour doesn't want any investigation of who's raping all the girls. Likewise, Kemi and the Tory Squish Party doesn't want any investigation of who's gang raping all the girls, because they know that will lose them any possibility of taking the Muslim vote for a generation. And in a generation's time, it won't be possible for anyone to win without the Muslim vote. So you can put it in war terms, you can put it in conquest terms, but it's actually simple demography. There's going to be more rape. There's going to be, I was a lot richer when I first went to Rotherham and places. And as I was before, I'd been exhausted by another 12 years of litigation or whatever. And if I'd known that was what I was in for, I would have taken, I think I would rather have done a Schindler's List type thing and rescued individual girls and relocated them on the other side of the world away from this. But the reality is, as Sammy Woodhouse says, she's living in Groundhog Day because, I'm terribly passionately concerned about all our girls in these towns, and I think we need to have another inquiry. Yes, I know I called for an inquiry 5 years ago, but we had that inquiry and it was completely worthless, just like this COVID inquiry is going to be completely worthless. So I think now I'd like to call for another. Sammy Woodhouse is living in Groundhog Day. And for any girls growing up in these towns, there's going to be a lot more gang rape in your future. This is a numbers game. This is a numbers game. That girl, actually, maybe I'll save that for one, as I said, for one of our, 20 years ago moments. But I'm disgusted. I'm disgusted by this. I can't stand watching this COVID inquiry. I can't stand watching the preening that's going on in Parliament, where supposed champions of these girls, like Sarah Champion, she voted against this pathetic inquiry a week ago. Now she says, yes, maybe we do need an inquiry. Poor old Sammy. Poor old Sammy, who's one of the bravest people I've ever met. And she's living in, as she says, in Groundhog Day. Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A, that'll do it for today. But do stick with Stein Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links. Laura Rosen-Cohen is going to round up the internet as only she can. She sent over a sad but telling tweet. From Ivor Kaplan, the guy who was arrested, the pedo minister of defence, who was arrested over the weekend for going to meet up with a 15-year-old boy whom he wanted to Roger him senseless. And he was arrested, but he's out now and he's back tweeting. And so he's doing his usual thing. He's followed by the ginger growler, Angela Rayner, he's followed by the Home Secretary, he's followed by the Chancellor of the Exchequer, on a Twitter feed that is 90% gay porn. So he's the first thing he does. Now he's back on Twitter, he puts up four Twinkie lads naked and gives them the code word for email him or whatever, or DM him, the hardcore stuff. So that's Her Late Majesty's Minister of Defence. Anyway, Laura will have lots more of that kind of stuff tomorrow on Laura's Links, and join me Friday for a brand new Tale for Our Time on the theme of where our terrible world is headed. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Steyn Club, come on in. The water's fine. And don't forget, on the subject of water, our cruise sailing from Portugal in April. And with our favourite Samanthas on board, Sammy Woodhouse and Samantha Smith, we will try to give them a break from Groundhog Day without end. Stay safe, stay free, stay well.
Mark Steyn's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Steyn Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.